You're listening to Allied Health Podcast, talking all things allied health with your hosts, Danielle Whedon, physiotherapist, and Claire Jones, occupational therapist.
Hello, I'm Claire Jones, and in this episode of Allied Health Podcast, I'm talking to Cassie Rosso, an experienced speech pathologist who is currently locuming in the UK. Cassie is also host of the terrific podcast series, Diary of a New Grad Speechy. Welcome, Cassie, and thank you so much for joining me all the way from London.
Thank you so much, Claire, for having me. It's great to be here.
So how are things in London? What's happening over there?
Minus the cold weather, it's actually so good. There's always so much going on, which I'm sure you know, and everybody who lives in London or has been to London knows. So busy. There's always so much happening, which is amazing.
Fantastic. What area of London are you in?
So I live in Fulham, which is, it's technically southwest, but it's north of the river. So yep. You might be familiar with like Chelsea Football Club or Fulham.
Yeah. Lots of great pubs in the area.
So many.
So Cassie, you've got your own podcast series, Diary of a New Grad Speechy, which you host with Ash C. For anyone who's listening who's not familiar with the podcast, what's it all about?
Yeah, this is actually my first time I've been a guest on another podcast, so I'm actually loving being this side of the microphone. So Diary of a New Grad Speechy is a speech pathology specific podcast who, as you mentioned, Claire, I started with my colleague Ash, which we started in 2020, so COVID years, after noticing a really big gap in the Australian market for information and support for speech pathology students and early career speechies, including ourselves at the time. So it's aimed for those who are studying speech pathology and those who have just entered the workforce who feel like they know a little bit about a lot.
It's so true, isn't it, that stage of your career? And now you're locuming in London. Can you tell us a little bit, firstly, about your career to this point and why you decided to take a working holiday in the UK?
Yeah, so I feel like you always know somebody that has lived in the UK or wants to live in the UK. So it's always, I think, something that us Australians like always like talk about amongst each other in our careers. So I've been working as a speechy for coming up to 7 years now. And was really fortunate enough to have like positions across Australia, working in private practice, and really had the opportunity to like upskill my interest areas a lot. So I was sort of at the point in my career where I had a really good job. I was a senior practitioner. You know, I was seeing the clients that I really wanted to see, but I found that there was something that I wanted to do more, or I wanted something more out of, I guess, like my career and maybe my life. And so that's when I kind of decided, well, why don't I just move to the UK? Everybody always talks about it. I was sort of lucky enough to be in the position where I could, move home for a little bit and save a bit more money to get over here. And my work was really flexible with sort of letting me do that. So yeah, and then we just started the process to come here.
Yeah. So the process is quite lengthy, isn't it? There's quite a few things that you need to tick off the list in order to be able to work in the UK. Professional registration is probably the best place to start. So unlike speech pathology in Australia, you do need to be registered with the Health and Care Professions Council in the UK, called HCPC. How long did it take you to prepare your application, and how long did it take for it to be processed and for you to gain approval to work in the UK?
Such a good question. This was, I think, definitely the longest and most stressful process of the entire move. I guess like not to scare anybody or put anybody off, but it does require so much life admin and extra costs that you kind of don't know about initially. So my recruitment agency at the time really helped me with this actually and kind of helped me get started and figure out what documents I needed to get sorted. But it took me about 6 to 7 months, from starting the process to actually it being approved, which was quite a long time. I actually hadn't had the HCPC, like I'd sort of had a job lined up, but I hadn't had my registration come through yet. So, you know, a lot of jobs will kind of say no to you unless you've got that registration. So definitely apply for that as soon as you can. Yeah.
It's definitely the best place to start, isn't it? It's the thing that takes the longest, so it's the best place to start. How did you go with things like getting the course information form from your university?
They were actually quite helpful, but it required so much calling, and I think it cost me a couple of $100 actually to get that done, which I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Most universities will charge you for the course information form.
Yeah. And then I had to also get my degree certificate because I don't know where mine is. I think when you've been out of uni for so long, you don't actually keep a copy of that. So I had to pay for that as well.
There's something to be said for getting your certificate framed and put on the wall, isn't it? Because then you always know where it is. I didn't at the time either. And I'm like you, I've got no idea where it is.
Yes. Well, I'm sure you don't probably need it now. And I don't, you know, you don't need it after you get the HCPC.
So while you were, so had you arrived in London before your registration was approved, Cassie?
I did, yeah.
Right. And so what did you do while you were waiting for it to be approved? Could you get any assistant work, or did you pick up any, did you go traveling? What did you do to fill in time?
Yeah. So we went traveling for a bit, but I was speaking to my employer at the time and they said, look, if you don't have it, you can always start as an assistant and then we can sort of move you over. But obviously with that, there comes hurdles and it's a long process to do that as well.
Yeah. So what did you end up doing?
Just went traveling.
Yeah. Nice. That's a good solution to the problem, isn't it? And also, like, to keep in mind that when you arrived in the UK, how much experience did you have clinically?
I was 6 years out.
Yeah. So you've got a solid amount of experience. And even then it was just a better option to travel for a while. Yeah. How did you go with, obviously you need professional registration and you also need entitlement to work in the UK. So do you hold a British passport or did you apply for a visa?
Yeah. So I actually have a European passport, but because of Brexit, obviously we can't use that. So I did have to apply for the youth mobility or the tier 5 visa.
Mm-hmm. And can you run us through that process?
Actually, so easy and so fast. I think from application to getting it approved, it was about 2 weeks.
Wow. And what about the biometric testing? What did that involve?
Yeah. So that again was another cost associated with the visa application, which we weren't aware of, but that was all done in Brisbane. So we were lucky enough to be living there at the time. I do know that if you're living in more like regional or rural places, you do have to make the trek down to those major cities to get that done. But that was just like photos and fingerprints. And then we had to pick up our little card when we arrived in the UK.
What does the card mean? What does that card do for you?
No idea. I think they're actually phasing out the cards, but I think it's kind of like a physical proof that you've got a visa.
Right. We interviewed Nick Snead, who's an OT, who's locoming in the UK as well, back in series 2, I think it was. And was working in Darwin at the time, and he could have flown down to Brisbane, but he ended up flying home to Melbourne to get his biometric testing done. So for anyone who's out of major capital cities, just keep in mind that you may have to travel to get that biometric testing done. What about money, managing money, opening a bank account? How did you go with all of that?
Such a good question. Again, all of these things you don't actually think about when you move to another country. Before we left, we had set up a kind of travel bank account or a global currency account.
Yeah.
So we were sort of able to move our money between Australian to that to travel, which was really handy.
And who was that with, Cassie? So who was that with?
So that was with a company called Wise.
Wise.
Or yep. TravelWise.
Yeah. Yep. I used Wise recently when I was in Italy. and it was fantastic. It's so easy. And it was, just a great way to manage your Australian money in a foreign country.
Yeah, it's good. Hey, and there's no fees or anything associated with it.
And really good exchange rates as well.
Yes, recommend them highly.
So you used the Wise card for a while, and then what did you do?
Yeah, so when you move to the UK, it's kind of like a chicken and egg situation. You can only really apply for one thing before you have the other. So having a bank account, you needed to have a national insurance number first, which is kind of like a tax file number. And then you also need to have a UK-based address as well before you can open a bank account here. So we were lucky enough that we had at the time an address that we could use to set up our national insurance number. And then we could also set up a bank account that way. But the UK is really fussy that if you kind of apply for a bank account without having those things, you'll get rejected and then you won't actually be able to apply for a bank account with that bank again. So,
wow. Yeah, one shot at it.
One shot. And if you don't do it right, they know.
Can you get, is it possible to get paid into your Wise account, or do you need to have a bank account to get your, to receive your pay? Like a UK bank account, sorry.
Yeah, as far as I know, you can get paid into Wise.
Right. So you could use that as a, as an, like a, could you use that ongoing or as a temporary solution at least?
Yeah, I've got friends that still use it ongoing for all of their UK-based stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? What are the benefits of having a bank account, Cassie? Are there any, having a UK bank account?
I don't actually know, other than the fact that people say it's great for your credit rating or great for your credit score. But
yeah,
if you're not here permanently, it might not even really affect you that much. Yeah.
But I guess maybe, and I'm not sure about this, but maybe if you're thinking about sort of buying, you know, property or investing in some way when you get back to Australia, maybe it's good to have that credit history for that period of time with a UK bank.
Yeah. And the other thing I found was that it's really easy, obviously, to kind of sort your money into, like, if you're the kind of person that has like savings and you like to have that separately, whereas Wise, I guess, doesn't really allow you to do that as flexibly.
Yeah. And what about accommodation? How did you go about securing accommodation in Fulham in London? Highly sought, all accommodation. It's difficult, isn't it, to find accommodation in London, let alone places like Fulham, which are really popular.
Yeah, again, a good question. I feel like every time you tell somebody that you are moving here or that you're living here, they're like, how did you find that house? So we kind of got really lucky at the start because we moved over with another couple who was, they were actually already living here at the time. So they kind of did all of the hard work to find a place initially. So we just hopped off the plane and came straight in.
So that's how you do it. You get some friends that are already there and they organize it for you. Easy.
Easy as. And then with finding our Fulham place, we actually had to have jobs. We had jobs for 6 months at that point. So that really did work in our favor. And we had savings behind us to be able to support the application for this place. So I would definitely recommend that sort of if you're moving here to get started, just finding something short term, maybe a sublet or somebody that's already living here, work for a little bit, have some savings, and then apply for a more permanent place.
Right. And what sort of, how are people finding short-term accommodation? Are there some good websites or is it word of mouth or how are they doing that?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I use the Facebook page Aussies in London a lot. Yeah. And there's a couple of good apps. The one that I have used recently is called Mates Place. And I've just posted our place on there. You know, if we have any sort of sublet short-term things available if we're traveling.
Oh, so you'll lease your room out if you're traveling. Well, that's a good idea, isn't it?
Everybody I know does that as well. So it's really handy to help out people who have just moved here and don't have anywhere to live.
Yeah. So that's where you can pick up a room for 3 or 4 weeks if you've headed off to Europe for a bit of a stint. Yeah, fantastic. Now, can you tell us a little more about your first locum role? How long have you been working in the UK? That's a good place to start.
Yeah. So we've been here for nearly 11 months now.
Okay. It's a solid stint. And tell us, what was your first locum?
So my first locum job was organized through my recruitment agency at the time prior to me arriving in London, as I said before. So I was working for an NHS trust doing some community pediatric work. So basically all the clients sort of came to us at the clinic and then we provided some support there. So I was doing that for about 8 months.
A long locum. So was it always going to be 8 months, Cassie, or did it roll into 8 months?
Yeah. So at the time when I got the job, they offered me a 3-month contract and then they always say, oh, you know, it can likely to be extended or it might be extended. So you kind of have, I think, about a month out from your contract ending, they will tell you if it gets renewed. So I just kept getting it renewed. I think I got it renewed about 3 times. So I could have stayed there, fortunately enough for me, as long as I wanted to, but it was a personal decision for me to sort of move on from that role. So I'm in another position now, which I've been in for about 6 weeks.
And what did that 8 month locum, what did the work involve? You were out in the community. Was it a pediatric locum?
It was a pediatric locum. Yeah. So we were working for, it was the children's hospital, but it was their community clinic. So if you think of like a child development service in Australia, really similar to something like that. So we were doing assessment and intervention for children who had either been in the hospital as young children or were referred to us in the community. So they would come to us and see us in the clinic.
And was it, it was clinic based. You weren't working out in, were you doing sort of kindergarten and school visits as well, or was it all clinic based?
Yep. So mostly clinic based, but because I was working for the early intervention team, I would sometimes have to go to like childcares, or they call them nurseries here. And then there were some clinicians who were working for schools, so they would go out to the schools.
Right. And how was that transition into your first locum role? How did you find it?
You know what? To be completely honest, it was actually really challenging to start with. Like getting the role and the post was really, really smooth and easy. I just sort of, you know, had to rock up on the day. But I obviously was in a position where I had the experience clinically to be able to do my job really well and really easily. But the stuff that I found really challenging here was sort of that operational side of things. So understanding what the NHS is, how it works, all of these terms like a nursery instead of a childcare, and what age children go to school. So all of that was actually really hard to get my head around, and I'm obviously still learning that now. So it's actually quite challenging.
And what would your advice be to anyone who's considering a working holiday in the UK in terms of, you know, level of clinical knowledge and, you know, and the challenges that you face sort of entering a new healthcare system and working as a locum as well?
Yeah, I think definitely making sure that you know what kind of job you want coming over here, because that was the biggest thing. You know, there's, I guess, so many areas that you could work in. And if you're not confident clinically, you might end up in a position that maybe you don't feel so confident in, and you're trying to learn the system. And then you're also like, you know, isolated as well from your family and friends and everything. So I would say definitely making sure you've got that clinical confidence. So whether that's a couple of years experience and maybe having some skills that aren't like specialized as such, but having maybe an interest area so that when you're moving here, it doesn't feel so overwhelming. You kind of have that specialist knowledge in one area that you could work in so that you're feeling a little bit more confident.
Were you treated any differently as a locum, Cassie? Because I know some locums that I did in the UK and Ireland, I was sort of expected to hit the ground running, and I did have a supervisor and I did have some supervision, but there were times when I wasn't invited to things like staff meetings. And at first I sort of took it personally, but I got my head around the fact that, no, I was being paid a higher rate and they didn't want to have me sitting in a staff meeting when I could be out, you know, seeing patients. Did you find that, or did you not feel you were any different because you were just a locum?
I'm actually so glad that you brought this up, because my Aussie locum friends and I will often talk about this. So definitely in my first role, I sort of did feel as though I was on the outer. You know, I was the locum. I was, you know, the one that was just here for a short time. So I definitely didn't have access to things like support or supervision, or couldn't attend staff meetings. So I definitely did feel quite isolated, and I didn't really feel like I was part of the team. So that in itself was really challenging to accept coming from Australia, where you've sort of got that, you know, that team that maybe you've been working with for a few years. It's very different.
Yeah. And I guess also working in Australia, I know that I'd had 2 years working at Royal Brisbane Hospital, and we didn't have locums. We didn't have locums working in the department. So to pick up and move to the UK and be working in an, you know, entirely new healthcare system in an entirely new department where you don't know anyone, and to then have someone say, no, you're not coming to the staff meeting. I'm a bit sensitive, I'll admit that. But...
no, I feel the exact same.
And it was winter and it was cold.
And you're kind of just the only one in the office at your desk while everybody's, you know, you can hear them in this in the meeting room.
It's a whole lot of fun working in the UK, isn't it?
This is just the stuff nobody tells you.
That's right. And this is the stuff where all the personal growth happens, isn't it, Cassie?
So true.
And with the amount of experience you've got, what level are you working at? So for those of you who are listening who aren't familiar with the gradings of therapists in the UK, there's band 5, which is graduate level, band 6, which is generally sort of, well, it used to be sort of 2 to 3 to 4 years experience, but I think it's dropped down now to about maybe 12 months experience to, I don't know. Cassie, you could probably answer this better than I can.
No, you've hit the nail on the head.
So how much experience have you got? You've got
7 years.
7 years. And what level are you working at now?
Yeah. So I'm working at a band 7 level, which is, sort of having a few years experience. Usually for some NHS trusts, if you're working at a band 7, you're like a supervisor or you're a senior, but as a locum, you don't get those abilities. You don't get the ability to be able to supervise or anything like that. So I'm just sort of a senior clinician.
Right. So are you taking on the more complex cases at that level?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm also helping out a lot with, like admin processes and report writing and things like that, and supporting new clinicians with those areas.
And are you finding that the work's challenging, and are you engaged by the work? Do you think you're growing clinically?
Yes and no. I think in Australia, for speech pathology anyway, we definitely, I would say, are a lot more advanced in terms of our approaches or the way that our learning is for therapy and assessment. Mm-hmm. The areas that I feel like I'm growing in is more like, you know, diversity or supporting clients or having difficult conversations with families. So lots of the other side of our role that we have to do on a daily basis, that's definitely the areas that I feel like I'm growing the most in.
Yeah, which is really worthwhile. And without talking specifically about money, are you earning enough to have a good life over there? Are you doing everything that you want to do over there financially?
Again, yes and no at the same time. But I think, you know, when you tell somebody that you're moving to the UK, they're always like, oh, the pay is not as good. But I think, you know, in healthcare, we're in a really niche position where I've got a lot of friends who don't work in healthcare and are kind of struggling to find jobs, or the pay is not as high. So I think in healthcare, we're definitely getting paid probably the highest out of other industries compared to things obviously like finance or business. But I would say it's quite similar to an Australian wage as a locum. So yes, I've definitely been able to live and travel and still save at the same time, which is really nice.
Are you enjoying being so close to the rest of the world, basically, over there? So close to Europe?
So close. You don't realize how far away we actually are in Australia.
What exciting trips have you done? What's been your highlight so far, travel-wise?
Oh, I wish we had this interview next week, because I'm actually going to Finland next week to see the Northern Lights. So I know that's going to be up there. But so far, we have done, I really liked Spain and Portugal. I don't know if you've been there.
No, I haven't, but I just hear wonderful things about Spain and Portugal.
Yeah, would definitely recommend adding to your list.
And what's been your overall highlight so far in terms of working, in terms of locuming in the UK, Cassie?
I think the highlight has definitely been, you know, meeting lots of people at work. Although as a locum, I mentioned before, you can feel like you're on the outer, but the teams have been so welcoming and really just wanting to sort of get to know our experience studying and working. And I think the highlight has sort of been coming into a workplace and feeling really confident clinically. Sometimes you do feel so lucky in Australia, like how good our education and healthcare system really is. So I think that's a highlight, of sort of coming in and being able to support them professionally and clinically with the experience and knowledge that we have.
And what would you say, without sounding negative, what's been the biggest challenge that you would say people need to be prepared for?
100% what we mentioned earlier about learning the operational system, processes about their healthcare system. So that's definitely been the hardest thing to get my head around. And like I said, I'm on my second post now as a locum and I'm still learning. You know, each place that you work for is so different. So that is just something that sort of adds to the challenge of moving here on your own.
Yeah.
And the cold. Yeah.
And the cold. And the cold, of course, the cold. I think the good thing though about working to a different healthcare system, Cassie, is that we've got so many schemes in Australia. Of course, we've got NDIS and WorkCover and TAC and our aged care scheme that, you know, once you've, if you haven't got experience across a number of schemes before you go to the UK, becoming familiar and having that experience of working within another system should give you the confidence to step into any area when you come back to Australia. That's a positive, isn't it?
Totally agree. And I think also you have this, you know, new fondness with the Australian healthcare system, and you do realize how lucky we are to have that and how lucky our clients and our patients are to be involved in that system.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much for joining me today, Cassie, on Allied Health Podcast and sharing your firsthand experience of living and locuming in the UK as a speechie. For any Allied Health professionals considering a working holiday in the UK, please get in touch. Our team is here to assist with all the necessary preparations and to source you great locum roles right across the UK. And last but not least, make sure you subscribe to Diary of a New Grad Speechie. Thanks, Cassie.
Thank you so much, Claire.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Allied Health Podcast. In the show's notes, you'll find links to our free recruitment resources, job opportunities, and healthcare marketplace insights. To listen to new episodes, please subscribe via Apple, Google, or wherever you find your favourite podcasts. And if you've enjoyed the show, please give it a 5-star rating and review, and be sure to tell your therapy colleagues and friends to tune in.